703, blah, blah, blah.
Is this not working?
Start 7 again.
This is Lee Hazelwood.
Uh-huh. And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
Turn out for Way Farms WGXE 90.7 FM's karaoke contest fundraiser at Half Moon in Hudson on Friday, May 10th. The evening will be hosted by karaoke Amanda of WGXC show Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, with proceeds from ticket sales benefiting WGXC. The contest's theme is communication, so all songs related to dialing, radio, phone, internet, fax, and more are eligible. Choose your tune and sing it for our guest judges, Ariel and Gloria of WGXC show Las Brujas Bilingües, and DJ Patty Boom of WGXC show Vinyl Freedom to win prizes. Prizes include tickets to the Negative Land and Sue C., Matt Mose, and Rodney Allen Greenblatt show at the Greenville Drive-In and other goodies. Doors are open at 7 p.m. and karaoke contest begins at 8 p.m. If you can't turn out in person, tune in for a live broadcast of the event on the FM dial or online. For more information, visit the community calendar at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org. Every Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m., Left Bank Ciders in Catskill holds a community soup night. Every Thursday, they gather to eat soup made by members of our community, with all the proceeds benefiting a local cause. The soup is homemade, delicious, and affordable. A donation gets you a bowl, some bread, and lots of camaraderie. There's always a vegetarian soup option, and a different charity or cause gets the funds raised each week. They have held several community soup nights for your community radio station, WGXC. Left Bank Ciders is at 150 Water Street in Catskill, and Community Soup Night is there every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m.
Way Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Everett in Athens, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Revolution, got a revolution. Whole generation got a good evening. It's the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour. You're listening to us on station WGXC on your dial at 90.7 FM. But if you were traipsing down Main Street in Catskill, you could look into the window 393 Main Street and see us broadcasting from our brand spanking new studio. So it's brand new, so there might be a couple of hiccups in the broadcast tonight, but we'll deal with it. Now, normally tonight, your hosts would be Casey and myself, who go by the name of Poche Noir. But Casey is traveling, and I hope enjoying herself immensely. And though I do miss her, this show has in her stead tonight Peter Warren, my terrific comrade in the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America. Peter, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi. Great to be here, Bill. And again, WGXC 90.7. For the purposes of tonight's discussion, I'm a CDDSA member and also a member of the pro-Ukraine left and co-founder and current co-chair of Ukraine Solidarity Capital District, which is a local political activist group fighting for Ukrainian self-determination. So laying my cards on the table at the outset. Again, great to be here.
Very good. So this is our May show, and May, just nominally, is both the most permissive and conditional of months. You dig what I'm saying?
Permissive and conditional.
May.
Okay. Jesus, I'm so slow.
May, you may do this.
I'm caught up in this.
May happen.
Ukraine Palestine
All right.
bill.
Okay.
That pun, which is wonderful.
That was not a pun.
Wait a minute. Let's deconstruct that. May, permissive and conditional. That's true.
Has both two uses. That's
all. True.
All right.
That's true.
So we always broadcast at 7 p.m. on the first Tuesday of a month. So this is May 7th, more properly known as the 19th day of the month of Floreal in the year 232 in the French Republican calendar. And last Sunday, May 5th, was Karl Marx's birthday, too.
I knew that one. Of course I did. But the whole thing about the French Republican calendar, mental note made.
Custom of the show. We always give the date in the French Republican calendar.
Oh, I love it.
And you like
love
it? Okay.
Libations.
Now, Peter, before we get too deep into things, is it a little bit of a necessary litany? The opinions and remarks made in this program are just our own. They're not those of WGXC, nor are they properly of the DSA. Peter and I are just a couple of blokes who are socialists and members of the DSA just speaking our minds. The DSA is, quite intentionally, a pretty big tent. So to be a member of the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America, you do not have to be a strict Marxist as I am. Now, the intro to the show tonight was Volunteers by Jefferson Airplane from the 1969 album of the same name. That is a song you will not find played in rotation on any oldies stations. Seems to have been forgotten.
But White Rabbit was so much like more hippie-ish, so therefore people mm-hmm. relate to that, man.
Yes, that's right. True.
You know, Volunteers might be too strident.
A little too confrontational, maybe.
But a kick in bass line.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Good to hear through the speakers here.
So, normally, the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour has a particular issue for each episode. Tonight, Peter, you're our guest host, so the issue will be up to you as to what the substance of tonight's show will be. What would you like it to be?
The subject of tonight's show would be one socialist's analysis of the different ways in which the left responded to the Ukraine and Palestine geopolitical conflicts,
okay,
wars, et cetera. And, okay. and you know, through a lot of self analysis and also from my homework and reading that I did.
Okay.
So hopefully this makes some sense. If not, well, maybe we'll have a call-in show in the future and we can chew this over, you know, with a larger group. But
okay. Well,
that's my take.
Okay. But I hate to wax nostalgic, but actually, no, I don't hate to. I love to wax nostalgic. But what do you think of the whole idea of all of these campus protests with the Democratic Convention happening in Chicago? It is very much like, well, 1968.
That's like planetary alignment.
I know.
I mean,
or hopefully it will not be either tragedy, nor will it be farce.
Yeah, but it probably will be part of both. I mean, given the comedians involved, the subject matter, and so on. But it'll be interesting, since I remember seeing that, waxing nostalgic a little bit, although it was horrifying at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that on television in 1968, that whole from the perspective of the networks.
I was too young. I didn't understand
how the networks covered that stuff, and from the floor of the convention, going back to I think it was Grant Park. Or Lincoln Park in Chicago, where the big police riot was going on. So, I mean, I was 15 at that point. There you go. If you can figure it out, do the simple math. But I remember how shocking and horrifying it was. You couldn't, just like watching Vietnam on TV, right? Which you could turn on the TV any night. You could watch that going on, like with Dan Rather reporting from the Battle of Hue or whatever. So that was a big part of my political development, was seeing that stuff.
I remember the body bags that they would show.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a tank rolling out of the Battle of Hue with like a dozen Marines in body bags stacked on the back deck of it. And that it's an indelible image. And it's like, wow, these Americans getting killed here. And they showed that back then, right?
I remember that came right unfiltered. The very fact that it was shown was actually quite astonishing in those days.
Yeah, I think that got past the past the powers that be, and because it's such a like the whole thing about the Viet Cong guy being executed right on camera by the police chief of Saigon, also in the same year, which is that was a bad one, 1968. And again, I wasn't in the line of fire in any sense. I was only 15 and lived in upstate New York, in rural upstate New York. So it came through the TV. But I remember adults' response to it, and they were pretty freaked out.
So, like what? What do you remember?
Like just they I could tell when we watched this stuff, this is my parents, who are very, 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 very conservative, very straight-laced, solid Republicans.
The making of a socialist.
The making of a socialist.
It all comes back to Republican parents.
I guess so. We'll have to do a study on that. But how I could tell how disturbed they were. You know, these are WASP folks who didn't show very much emotion about that stuff. I could tell how disturbed they were. All right, and how much they were caring of this, even though they didn't want to talk about it. Right. And I really wanted to talk about it with them, but the only thing I remember from that is debates with my dad over the Vietnam War in general, in which he ended up slamming the table with his hand. And you know when dad starts slamming the table with a hand, you don't have a chance. And at that point, I just had a visceral sense, right, that the war was a bad thing because of all the stuff I was seeing about it from every source. And, you know, that's all they could really articulate. And, you know, Dad was a World War II veteran. He had all the facts lined up, and I had no chance. But eventually, one more little detail, in the middle of the Watergate crisis, they came down to see me at college in Albany, and I gingerly brought up the fact that, this is right in the Watergate period, that Nixon might resign, and my dad got mad and slammed the table with his hand, and I said, "Uh-oh, here it comes." But this time, I'm better armed. Okay, I'm not defenseless. I'm not 15. And he said, "No, he should be impeached."
Oh wow!
And I said to myself, "If Nixon's lost my dad, he's toast. He's done." I mean, the whole idea of my dad ever saying that about an office holder, much less a Republican one, I said, well, maybe we, like the Jefferson Airplane, maybe we got a revolution, at least in upstate New York among Republicans. So if they lost him, and I think, you know, in the current, back to Chicago Convention and the Palestine issue and so on, you know, the Democratic Party again, and the parties are losing the new generation, okay? I think they are. In the process of, I think those folks are going through the same, and these are many of our comrades too, as you know, right? Going through the same process of shock, dismay, grief, disillusionment. And it's like, you know, that's going to alienate them from the mainstream political process. And of course, that's an opportunity for DSA to to exploit. But I feel for them because I've been there. I come up through a political development where nobody really had answers for me, nor were the adults around me really willing to talk about this stuff. I had to do it on my own until I got to college. And of course, then SUNY Albany, University of Albany, was a hotbed of anti-war activity and everything else. So I jumped into that and got some perspective.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men, follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point anymore, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
Wow, that's a high water mark in folk music there. That was Pete Seeger, of course, doing Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. Peter, when was the first time that you saw that, or heard that, I should say?
That was when it was broadcast, I believe, live on the Smothers Brothers show. And I like the high water mark. That was a little...
Unintentional.
Was it unintentional?
That was unintentional.
I think you're still a solo wet, Bill, I'll tell you. You know. Anyway.
I did not mean that.
You know, high water mark. Broadcast live. Pete was on there on the Smothers Brothers show, which was as contrary as you got with mainstream broadcast, you know, the three network programming. And there's a whole bunch of crap before he got on about, oh my God, Pete Seeger, blacklisted lefty folk singer going on mainstream TV, which he'd been blacklisted for decades, right? And couldn't get a TV show, right? So he comes on, does that song, and then the true crap storm rained down. And I think that's, I'm not sure about this, I think that was one of the things that got the Smothers Brothers knocked off the air, was the outcry.
That was one of them.
And that was I mean, that's relatively tame.
And I think, what was that, 67?
I think that was 68.
68,
actually.
Okay, yep. that's the same year as
in
that
the
Democratic
same year.
Convention. Volunteers was 69.
Right, talk about the stars aligning, the planets aligning in 1968, man.
Does DSA have a resident astrologer?
I'll bet we do. I'll bet somewhere in our multi-talented membership, there is an astrologer.
Okay.
Who can read, or maybe can read the entrails, right? And tell us, you know, the cosmic significance.
I know whose entrails I would like to see.
Okay.
All right.
This is a family show.
Okay. All right. So we're going to do our little DSA, Capital District DSA, community calendar, let's
Yay.
Put it that way. So I got a couple of items. 5:30 on this Wednesday, May 8th, DSA members will meet up at United Tenants of Albany. That's 255 Orange Street in Albany. And from there, we're going to go door knock around some Albany neighborhoods to drum up support for the Emergency Tenant Protections Act, which is legislation which would allow rent control in Albany and in other localities where the legislative bodies pass such a thing. At 2 p.m. on this Saturday, May 11th, at the Moon River Cafe, 155 Ferry Street in Schenectady, the Political Education Committee of the Capital District Democratic Socialists of America is hosting a reading of Socialism Made Easy by the Irish revolutionary James Connolly. He's a favorite of mine. From 9 a.m., on what day? I didn't write down the day, so I don't know.
I think that's a Saturday, May 11th.
Hold it. Let me check my calendar. Yeah. Hold it. May 11th is this Saturday.
Okay.
And.
Nice venue, nice company, great subject. If you're able to get there, it'll be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And fun and interesting and worthwhile.
And at 4:30 p.m. on, of course, p.m., not a.m., on Saturday, May 18th, at the James Connolly Social Club, which is 386 First Street in Troy, a wonderful venue, there's going to be a talk by labor organizer David Van Dusen, who will discuss his new book, the title of which is Insurgent Labor, the Vermont AFL-CIO 2017 to 2023. I guess there must be some passages in that book relating to Bernie Sanders.
If there wasn't, I'd be real surprised.
I'd be surprised, too. All right, so that's all done. Would you like to take a musical break first before we get to discussing more Ukraine and
Let's take
Gaza?
An audio break with a clip. I'm going to explain what you're going to hear. A friend of mine in Ukraine's, a fellow member of Ukraine Solidarity Capital District, has a friend in the city of Odessa,
mm-hmm.
which is a Ukrainian city on the Black Sea, and his friend got a live audio recording of an Iranian Shahed drones attacking Odessa. These are little, like, model airplanes with a motorcycle engine carrying explosive charge. They're very cheap to make.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians launch them in swarms at Ukrainian cities. I don't know what sort of guidance they have, but it's like basically just launch a bunch of them, and they're going to, some of them will hit the target. So you're going to hear like what sounds like a lawnmower engine. Right, that's one of the drones. You're going to hear machine gun fire from the Ukrainian defenders, and also the heavier, like booming sounds, are their anti-aircraft cannon shooting at them. So this is an intro to, you know, what the Ukrainian working class in Odessa and all over the country near the front line, and that's a lot of places is suffering at this point.
Okay.
So this is within the last month.
Listeners, I suggest you use your imagination to put you in the moccasins of those people. Okay, that deserves a musical break.
Yeah, so just one other note. The good thing about Shahed drones is that they're really slow. They move at about 100 miles an hour, which for an aircraft is slow enough to acquire visually.
Mm-hmm.
You can track them visually, so people with machine guns over like open sites without any sort of special guidance can knock them down. But there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that was one drone. You heard that being targeted and hopefully shot down before it hit something and killed people.
Broken line and broken string, broken thread and broken frame, broken arrows and broken head, people sleeping in broken bed. Ain't no news of diving, ain't no news of joking. Everything is broken. Broken bottles and broken plates, broken switches and broken gates, broken dishes, broken pots, streets of fear with broken hearts. Broken words never meant to be spoken. Everything is broken. Hit the ground. Broken cutters and broken saws, broken buckles and broken laws, broken bodies and broken bones, broken boys, broken bones. Take a deep breath, feel like you are choking. Everything is broken. Every time you leave and go off someplace, things fall to pieces in my face. Broken hands on broken plow, broken thread and broken bow, broken pipe, broken tools, people bending broken rules, hound dog howling, bullfrog croaking. Everything is broken. Broken hands on broken plows, broken threads on broken bows, broken pipes, broken tools, people bending broken rules, hound dog howling, bullfrog croaking. Everything is broken.
Peter, Everything is Broken. That is by R.L. Burnside. You know where everything is broken?
Where?
In both Ukraine and in Gaza.
Yeah, and you know, the rubble looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a slightly different color here, but it's all like all beat up and bashed and pipes and cars and people all mixed together in the rubble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from the same sort of a process, like two colonialist states using indiscriminate bombardment, totally against any sort of international law, completely blatantly illegal, and the working classes in both countries are bearing the brunt of that. So, I guess my question is, our response to the Israeli assault on Gaza, on the left, has been wholehearted, enthusiastic, and constant, and that's a great thing, right? That feels to me like, you know, 1968 to 1970, where it's like our generation got in the streets and did this, and you know, that's a thrilling thing, which of course DSA is right behind, and I'm right behind too. But contrasted, since I think that Ukrainians and Palestinians are in the same position, fighting the same enemy for the same reason, for national liberation and self-determination. It's like, why was the left response to Russia's assault on Ukraine producing the same amount of broken stuff? Well, no, actually, Gaza more intense, but got into things like, well, Ukrainians are proxies for the U.S. and NATO, and this was all provoked by the United States, and you know, it's somehow that's not the same thing. So we have to be skeptical, extremely skeptical, or dismissive of the Ukrainian struggle, and you know, say that this is okay. This is another example. The Ukrainians are, since they're backed by U.S. weapons and backed by the support of the G20 countries for the most part, this isn't something we should get behind. We shouldn't support that as wholeheartedly as Israel and Palestine.
Oh, I've never felt that way. But I remember when the invasion of Ukraine first started, you and I met at the TSL. And there was Medea Benjamin there.
Right.
You were there for that, right?
Oh, I helped to organize
our
flyering of all her events in the Capital District, yep.
And she was kind of spouting an appeasement line by Ukraine.
Right. Ceasefire.
Right? Ceasefire, surrender.
Weapons cut off.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to peace again. Let's negotiate and so on.
I haven't heard anything about her with regard to Gaza.
Oh, I can tell you that Code Pink is very, very active. And, no complaint about that.
Is that so?
Yeah,
okay, because I haven't seen anything local about that.
They've been right in that struggle from the start, and God bless them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Our organization, Ukraine Solidarity Capital District, had some issues, like the ones I just got through saying, with their line and their perspective on Russia and Ukraine. So, and like, we spent some time battling against that perspective and flying her to events and asking questions and so on and so forth. So, what's going on here? So, I've got a thesis. I'll try to make it as brief as possible.
Lay it on us.
But, you know, going back to my political development, since I was 16 years old, I've thought of my country as being an imperialist, colonialist superpower that did enormous destruction and havoc and chaos in all kinds of ways to people in the developing world, people of color for the most part. So Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and El Salvador, Nicaragua, Iraq, and, you know, I think I can't speak for anybody but myself, but I think generally our, you know, most leftists have a visceral emotional response to that, of outrage and shock and horror of our own country doing this. and an intellectual revulsion to it, or intellectual objection to it, based on our, you know, let's say socialist principles or progressive principles. And, you know, we got the receipts for that. The bloody handprints are all over these incidents. So I think that, and I can speak for myself here, when I first thought about, I had the thought, Ukraine is fighting a war of national liberation for self-determination. The facts were undisputable, but emotionally, it's like it didn't sound right, and it didn't feel right. It's like, that just doesn't land in the right place. I can't feel that. And so then I went further and say, why are you feeling this way, since the facts on the ground are indisputable? And I know your experience is different from,
Mine was different. I was down with it from the beginning,
right,
because,
right,
you know, I just thought, in the course of human events.
Right.
You know, that's all.
So interrogating my own feelings about that, it's like, okay, Israel and Palestine map completely onto the model that most people in the American left have been used to. That is, the United States is imperialist power, using military force or other sorts of coercive things to do harm to people of color in the developing world. So that's something that fits with our paradigm of how these things work quite well. Whereas I think that, and this is my opinion, that Ukraine, Russia and Ukraine doesn't fit that way. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is the ethnicity of the victims in the case of Ukrainians. They are white Europeans who have cars, who live in apartment blocks in European cities with internet and Starbucks and computers. So,
but we don't see the Palestinians as that. They have cars.
They do,
they have
too.
Cell phones. They have computers.
They do too.
There's probably a Mac store there somewhere.
Right.
You never
want to dismiss race and skin color in this. So maybe it's just like, hey, they're white Europeans, and white Europeans we tend to maybe categorize as in the oppressor category. So they're not the right type of victims that we're used to seeing that fits into our paradigm of what the United States does. I think the other big thing, and I've noticed this in the conversations with our comrades and other people, it's like, well, the United States is backing Ukraine, and the NATO powers are backing Ukraine. And so U.S. weapons are very bad, right? And therefore, in per se, and whoever is a recipient of U.S. weapons are, I think, in our paradigm, the bad guys, because that's often been the case, right? And all the things, Nicaragua, the Nicaraguan Contras, U.S. weapons, all kinds of cases of that. So in those two basic ways, I think leftists couldn't emotionally accept the idea of Ukraine fighting a war of national liberation, and the working classes of Ukraine being in the same boat for the same reasons as Palestinians were. And well, that's my take on why there is such a different response to those two events. And not to be critical, really, just to...
You can be critical.
Just to,
that's
just
what
the to
show's
say,
about.
Well, I think that I'd say it's a loss to be kind. I mean, it's been a lost opportunity for the American left to stand with two working classes for the same reasons. And in my current work, I do a lot of work with Ukrainian Americans, with the local Ukrainian community, and who have relatives and friends being killed every day, right, in the Ukrainian army or Shahed drones or whatever. So both of these struggles are a chance for the American left to be in solidarity with two groups of American, Palestinian Americans, Ukrainian Americans, and therefore move our political work forward. So why couldn't we have both of those things going on at the same time? So I think that makes me sad. I think of a lost opportunity. And I think that I think at first I felt cognitive dissonance when, you know, Ukraine fighting a war of national liberation didn't land right with me. I think it's like, this doesn't fit with my lifelong paradigm since I was 16 years old of how things work in the world and the United States' role in it. So I'm inclined, as cognitive dissonance will tell you to discard the thing that conflicts with my deeply held long-term beliefs and thoughts about this,
mm-hmm.
because it's too painful to have to take this on board and maybe adjust to the idea that could the United States ever support the good guys as we see it? And, well,
strange bedfellows for the United States to be supporting the good guys, but it can happen.
The U.S. did support Rojava in their fight against ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
We supported the YPG, and, you know, the Kurdish YPG, the little statelet of Rojava, is like as close to our politics, as close to democratic socialist or libertarian socialist politics as you could find.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rojavans were probably not thrilled to have the United States involved with them, but they were glad to get air support and artillery support in fighting ISIS. And by the same token, I mean, early on, I was on a call with...
I am completely unfamiliar with what you are talking about. So perhaps other listeners are too.
Rojava.
Yes.
Being a...
Clue us, please.
A Kurdish enclave, right, that's run by an anarchist, libertarian, socialist movement, which has a very, very large and effective paramilitary wing called the YPG. And it's, you know, within this little state, which exists because the Turks and the Iraqis and the Syrians haven't crushed it yet, they've established a government and an armed forces, really,
mm-hmm.
to try to protect themselves, their politics, which is also Kurdish nationalism, from the neighboring powers. And because these other powers have been scrapping with each other, fighting with each other, they've been able to do that. And when it came time to confront ISIS in Syria and Iraq, I mean, YPG, the Kurdish libertarian socialist movement, was in mortal danger from ISIS. They were willing to fight on the ground very effectively, and they asked for American air support and artillery support in fighting ISIS, and we helped them, and they're still around. Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot. And by the same token, to bring it back down to maybe something that's more familiar, I was on a call with a Ukrainian democratic socialist early in the war, a member of Socialny Rukh, which is their democratic socialist, their Ukrainian version of DSA, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of U.S. arms came up, which is like such a troubling thing in this whole situation. And she said, look, if there was a democratic socialist superpower run by King Bernie Sanders or President Bernie Sanders somewhere that could provide us with the stuff we need to fight off Russia, which, since we're so outnumbered and so hard-pressed by the Russians, we'd be glad to go there instead. We wouldn't hesitate. We don't like the idea that we have to take U.S. military assistance, but that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fighting a existential struggle against, by the way, a power that wants to eradicate their national culture, recolonize Ukraine. I mean, that's Putin's plan. And so it's in those circumstances, what are they going to do? Right. And that would be my I've never posed this question to leftists who oppose, like, who are, you know, let's say a little bit pro-Russian, or, you know, in the code pink camp, right? What do you want the Ukrainians to do? And I guess the code pink thing would be, well, basically surrender. And make a deal with the Russians. And, like,
see, I have a different interpretation of the whole code pink Medea Benjamin thing. I see it kind of simply that she's got this peace brand, right? It's kind of, you know, it's kind of Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is that she's got this brand she's got to promote. It's a simple thing. Right. Buy my brand, sell my book about. You know,
no
buy my book. And so it doesn't fit into her paradigm. And so she's got to make it fit into her paradigm.
Right. To take your thought a step further, like, what if Medea came out and said, look, we have to support the Ukrainians, as much as I hate to admit it.
It's going to hurt a brand.
They're fighting a war for national liberation. And again, the cognitive dissonance from her constituency, her numbers, her contributors and supporters who support her, or support her organization quite effectively, would say, So, yeah, I mean,
it hurts her branding.
The brand. And of course, I'm not going to say this is the case with Medea, but there's also Russian propaganda, which was waiting there for people who were confused or upset about Ukraine and didn't know what to think and say, hey, yes, you're right. It is a U.S.-NATO thing. The U.S. and NATO provoked this thing all day long. The Russians are just defending themselves. It's really a defensive operation. And, you know, the Russians want peace as much as anybody else. So, you know, it's the bad United States and NATO which is prolonging this thing by giving them weapons. Yeah, the Russians are in this game, too, for various self-interests and obvious reasons.
I also think they have a lot of compromise on people.
I mean, why wouldn't they?
Right? I think that I think it's been a tactic for probably decades now.
They are so good. And one of my groups, U.S. Ukraine Solidarity Capital District has been involved in, is identifying Russian propaganda, identifying propagandists, and, you know, trying to analyze for people like in the general public how this works and what to look for. In terms of what they're saying, and it gets laundered through a lot of different sources in the United States. So yeah, that's my thesis. That's my analysis. And it's like Ukraine, Russia doesn't fit. Still doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with Medea Benjamin's brand or other leftist groups of that same ilk. It doesn't fit with a lot of, especially, you know, younger people who you know come up in the left tradition, or people of my generation as well. It's like, how could this be something we could support when the United States is involved with weapons and it's in Europe and so on? Notwithstanding the fact that Ukrainians have been a highly marginalized people throughout their history, and this is like an attempt to, you know, eradicate them in the same way as I think, and I don't think there'd be much argument from our side of the fence, that the Israelis are trying to ethnically cleanse and eradicate the Palestinians from the territory they see as theirs. So
It's a land grab, too. Don't forget it's waterfront property.
Oh, the Jordan River.
The Jordan River and the Mediterranean, it's waterfront property.
Waterfront property. Yeah, you can't ever forget.
That was the wrong song I wanted to play. Hold it. Here it is now. This is the song I actually wanted to play.
Time.
Seven Nation Army, The White Stripes. That is a song I would hear in the shower and sing in the shower. Oh, wow.
And you know, that's not really dad rock, I don't think.
What do you mean dad rock?
Dad rock would mean, I think, mostly like what boomer dads would listen to or play for their kids. So I think that you've broken out of that, or maybe you never were.
So you think Volunteers was dad rock?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's like boomer rock and roll.
Oh, my God, that makes me feel terrible.
It's, you know, it's...
Because I have no kids. I don't want any kids.
What does it matter if it's dad rock or not, I guess, because...
Abolish the family.
It's the whole boomer, anti-boomer prejudice, which is well-founded to a certain degree. But
oh, yeah.
For God's sake, folks, there's some good songs in there, like the Jefferson Airplane. And it's not just White Rabbit.
No, it's
or
not
Somebody
just
to Love. It's some highly politicized stuff, and they did a lot of political work back in the day.
Okay, so let's see.
That was good.
What else could we play? Well, let's talk a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, I did that little bit of DSA community calendar that was there, but is there anything coming up with regard to Ukraine?
In fact, there is. Ukraine Solidarity Capital District is co-sponsoring with Ukrainian American Community Cultural Center in Waterbleat, another local showing of 20 Days in Mariupol.
Mm-hmm.
That's on May 17th at 6:30.
Where's that going to be?
That's going to be at the Ukrainian American Community Cultural Center in Waterbleat, New York. So for people from the capital region, that's quite convenient. This is the second showing we've had. We also showed it at TSL.
I remember.
In conjunction with Medical Relief Ukraine. So mm-hmm. working with the local Ukrainian community. And, you know, 20 Days in Mariupol is an Oscar-winning, won the Academy Award this year for Best Documentary, and is the first Ukrainian film to ever win an Oscar. And, you know, I saw the acceptance speech by the filmmakers, and the spokesperson said, I hated making this film because it's a tough watch. It's the siege of Mariupol from the perspective of, again, working class Ukrainians caught up in the Russian invasion and the bombardment of the city.
Okay.
So I mean that's the sort of thing that if you're on the fence about mm-hmm. your feelings or your thoughts about Ukraine, watch that. And, you know, it's not fake news.
It's also like, on YouTube, right?
Also on YouTube, okay. Yes. Free from Netflix. But this is a benefit concert for Medical Relief Ukraine, which provides prosthesis for Ukrainian war veterans and others, and also for the Ukrainian American Community Center. Local Ukrainians have been busy since February 24, 2022, like getting tons of supplies together. I mean, their local civil society has been working around the clock to help out. So.
Okay. So we're at the close. It's almost 8 o'clock. That's all for this episode. Please tune in to 7 p.m. on the next first Tuesday of June, which will be June 4th. That will be Casey's No Doubt triumphant return to the airwaves.
Yeah.
And that show will be about a housing problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perennial problem that we have, or one of them that we have in this show. I'm going to be an audacious reporter. And I'm going to face certain peril by having a firsthand interview with that homeless troll that lives under the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. And we'll also have another special guest. And if you're interested in joining DSA, you may join at dsausa.org. You'll find many levels to comport with your finances, or you may find out more at capitaldistrictdsa, all one word, .org.